Support for WPR comes from Luther College in Decorah, where visitors can experience campus and learn about Luther's 60-plus academic programs, like engineering science, nursing, and music education. luther.edu/visit.
Support for WPR comes from the American Society of Landscape Architects Wisconsin Chapter. Dedicated to reimagining the design of outdoor spaces for the well-being of all. Examples at wiasla.com.
A recent article in Politico caught our attention. It wondered if atheism is taboo in American politics. And it asked why it was harder in America to come out as an atheist politician than a gay one. It was noted that Congressman Barney Frank, openly gay for 25 years, didn't mention that he was an atheist until after he retired, and then only in an offhanded way on the Bill Maher show. Is atheism in politics the last taboo? Good morning, I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Would you vote for an atheist? Why or why not? Does a politician's lack of religious belief matter to you? Do you agree or disagree that it could be considered a liability in politics to be known as an atheist? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is Paul Fidalgo, Communications Director for the Center for Inquiry, an organization that seeks to foster secular society based on science, reason, and other non-religious values. He's also the author of a mini-book, Under the Stained Glass Ceiling, Atheists' Precarious Place in Modern American Politics. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me on.
Well, thanks for being here. Do you agree with that statement that atheism in politics is the last taboo? The author of that recent Politico article was Jennifer Michael Hecht, and she referred to atheism as the last taboo in politics, more so than being gay. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, you know, it's hard to know at this particular point in history. Jennifer Michael Hecht, there's very few people who will know better than her. She's extremely knowledgeable on this subject. But we've had so few examples of non-religious politicians who have been open about it and have aspired to particularly high office that it's hard to know for sure what a grander public reaction would be. This actually mentions in the article, for example, the recently retired Pete Stark, who was the only admitted non-believer in congressional history that we know of. And for decades, his lack of religious belief was not an issue. It never came up. And only very recently did he even admit to it. And he was actually recently defeated. And we have some other smaller examples of lower office holders who have been admittedly atheists. But as far as anything beyond, say, a very liberal member of Congress who is in a very safe district for the most part, we really don't have any good examples of someone who's saying, I am an avowed atheist and I am aspiring to be the governor or the senator or the president. So it's hard to know that for certain. But I like to refer to something that Christopher Hitchens used to say, and I don't have the exact quote, but he used to say that, you know, in 1980, we didn't know whether the United States would elect a divorced Hollywood actor as president. And we found out what the answer to that was, and we got, you know, two terms of Ronald Reagan. So we need to see that person emerge before we can answer that question for sure.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned the example of California's Pete Stark. His opponent, when he was defeated in that election, did go after his atheism, or at least the fact that Pete Stark was trying to remove "In God We Trust" from currency.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's hard to know how. I mean, I haven't poured into the data on that particular district's election race, so it's hard to know what moved the needle in one direction or another. It doesn't surprise me at all that a lack of religiosity, though, would be used against the candidate. Now, is that what took the district's voters and made them want to retire Pete Stark? I mean, he is he's had a very long career. He has a very particular personality, and he has a very long record. So I can't say for sure that that is what did him in. For example, we have, Jennifer Michael Heck mentions her in the article, Kyrsten Sinema in Arizona, who is not using the label atheist, but it's known that she is non-religious. She's not identifying as an atheist or a non-theist at this point. But it's known that she is non-religious, and she's just been elected in a district in Arizona. And I think that's notable, and we'll see how far she gets and whether or not her lack of, let's say, overt religion affects her down the road.
When former U.S. Representative Barney Frank came out as an atheist, as a pot-smoking atheist, on the Bill Maher show, it was noted that that he didn't really say anything about this while he was in office, and Jennifer in that article was saying, "Gosh, he came out as gay back in the 1980s. Yet here we are, in 2013, and he hadn't made this known until now." He explained that he didn't say anything about it because he didn't think it was relevant to policy. Your reaction to that?
Yeah, I have a mixed reaction to that. I understand where he's coming from. I do, particularly because of the particular plight that LGBT Americans have had in recent decades and the enormous strides they've had to make, even for baseline acceptance. So, I kind of understand what he's talking about. But atheism is relevant to policy in a way, and that it's a counterpoint to the heavy-handed influence of religion from religious politicians, just from a symbolic standpoint. You know, with religious conservatives, they can beat their chests over how many of them serve in Congress, and they can hold a prayer caucus and all of this. And for that reason, I think it's important that the non-believers who are in Congress, even if they're not, axe-wielding atheists who are, militantly non-religious, but just those for whom religion is not important, if they can make a little noise themselves, not to convert people to atheism one way or the other, but to show that there's a constituency, there's a group in that legislative body that not only isn't all that interested in the question of God and isn't interested in using religion as a foundation for policymaking.
We are talking about atheism in politics. We're talking about atheist politicians. And wondering how you feel about this. Does a politician's religion or lack of religion matter to you? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is 18 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Friday, December 20th. We are talking with Paul Fidalgo. He is the author of Under the Stained Glass Ceiling, Atheists' Precarious Place in Modern American Politics. And that's what we're talking about. We're talking about whether It is too difficult for a politician today to come out as an atheist. Our conversation prompted in part by an article about U.S. Representative Barney Frank, who, while openly gay for 25 years, only came out as an atheist after he retired. And we're wondering why that is. We're wondering if you would vote for an atheist politician, whether you think it matters or not. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. And we have so many callers. Let me go to Brian in Oconomowoc right away. Hello, Brian.
Hi there. I thought of one other thing while I was on the phone, but my initial response was a few people that I know that are atheists would consider themselves atheists because they're based in logic and reason, and I don't see why that would be seen as a negative thing when we're talking about who's going to be representing the people. I think logic and reason is a good way to approach a lot of the issues that come about in politics or everyday life. My second thought was just the separation of church, or lack of church in this case, and state, and how that can come into play. I'll take this off the air. Thank you
very much, Brian. Well, what about that? Is it why would it be a negative, Paul, for a politician to be open about being an atheist?
That's a perfectly reasonable question, and it's one that we ask ourselves a lot. You know, the organization that I work for, the Center for Inquiry, is not necessarily all about just atheism and non-religion, but it is about exactly what the caller is talking about, which is science and reason and using those things as the basis for things like policy. So, yes, on paper, it makes perfect sense that you'd want folks who are thinking based on facts and data as they actually are versus holy revelation or what have you. But it remains that particularly in the United States and certainly in other parts of the world as well, religion is kind of a shorthand for morality. Many Americans have this supposition that morality is impossible without belief in a supernatural overseer. And that's really a false belief that we need to nip in the bud, you know, more so than say, my personal feeling is that it's less about a kind of bigotry toward atheists that is kind of what's getting in the way, but this false belief that in order to be moral and worthy of being a political leader, you need to have that belief in a God. And that's the kind of thing that we need to convince Americans of differently, so that they know that their atheist neighbors are just as moral and just as good as they are.
So how does the separation of church and state play into this?
Well, that's also a really good question, because there's probably no better representatives of that case than a non-religious politician. And it's very often it reaches crisis levels here in the United States. I mean, we have Supreme Court cases about whether we're going to have overt sectarian prayers in legislative sessions and city council sessions and in state legislatures. We have lots of arguments about symbolism, about the war on Christmas and things like that. So it makes sense that we would have folks from a non-religious perspective who can carry that message. But frankly, to really bring home the church-state separation message, it requires both non-believers and believers to understand that actually it makes the most sense for church-state separation for both those who espouse no religion and those who take their religion very seriously. It's better for religion and it's better for the state. So that's actually an issue that both of these sides can rally around.
Yeah. Do you think that we have seen attitudes about atheism change over time?
Definitely. There's no doubt about that. If you look at recent polling, you can see the numbers of those who consider themselves atheists to be ticking up. And if you spread the question out from, you know, whether you self-identify specifically as an atheist to whether you are someone who doesn't believe in God, or whether you are just someone for whom religion is not important, those numbers are going very high up over the past couple of decades, particularly look at some of the recent Pew numbers on that. But one note I would one thing that I would reference is as recent as 2008, in the 2008 election, in the congressional elections, there was a race for Senate in North Carolina where we had Kay Hagan challenging the incumbent Republican Elizabeth Dole. And if you recall, what happened in that election is there was an ad that was run against Kay Hagan, essentially accusing her of consorting with atheists. She had attended a fundraiser with a known atheist activist, and there was a lot of hubbub about that. What interested me about that was not only was someone being called out for consorting with the wrong kind of people, those, you know, scary atheists, but that Kay Hagan herself did not make a point of saying, you know what, it's okay if I consort with atheists, they're fine people as well. She took the tack instead of saying, don't insult my religion, don't question my Christianity. And that worried me a bit. Now, as obviously Kay Hagan won that election, so it didn't hurt her enough, particularly in a state like North Carolina, where you might think that it would. So that was a good sign. But the bad sign of that was that very few people were asking, hey, isn't it just okay that she goes to a fundraiser with an atheist? They weren't saying that. They were more worried about whether or not the Dole campaign was questioning her Christianity. So on one side, the atheist attack didn't hurt her, really, and she got elected nonetheless. So that tells me that maybe that's not such an effective weapon after all. On the other side, we didn't see anybody stand up for our community in that particular situation. And so that was very telling to me as to where we were right now, that atheism wasn't necessarily an absolute poison, but it was still something that even a politician who was on her way to winning was a little too afraid to even admit was okay.
Yeah. Let's take another call from Chuck in Dodgeville. Hello, Chuck.
Good morning.
Yes, go ahead.
Yes, I just wanted to say that many of our early founding fathers in American history, people such as Ben Franklin, George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, and even beyond that, Andrew Jackson, we're all atheists, and I think a lot of people are not aware of that.
Is that right, Paul?
Well, you know, there's a lot of argument about that, whether these founding fathers were deists, which is a way of saying they believed in a god, but one that isn't involved in daily human activity, or whether they were strictly non-religious. And you have lots of folks who argue that they were very specifically Christian and divinely ordained. And I don't know how useful that argument is. I think it's pretty obvious that the founding documents themselves, the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, are secular documents. There is very little reference to a deity at all. I think pretty much just in the Declaration of Independence, there's a passing reference to it. But it's really a false argument one way or the other because, you know, whether they were atheists, they didn't want a Christian government. So we can put that all aside. The fact that it's a better idea to have a secular government is more important. We make better policy when we don't favor religion over non-religion or one religion over another. We make better decisions when we base them on facts and science rather than superstition. So, you know, whether the founders were sent here divinely by God or whether they were a faction of, you know, new atheists like Richard Dawkins, it doesn't really matter because we make better policy and people are more free when we separate church from state and religion from policy. But it's an excellent point, though, that there was definitely not they were not fundamentalist Christians, we'll put it that way, the founders.
Our next caller is Pete in Reidsville. I'm sorry, it's Reidsfield. Go ahead, Pete.
Hi. I was just chatting with my wife, and the points that are being made are really this separation of church and state that I think that it really is something I'd like to think of myself as approaching this, that it's immaterial. But I think that, for me, I would say the majority of people in the United States would agree with the statement that they're spiritual and not religious. And my own personal background is I was raised in a non-denominational church. I raised my kids as Unitarians, which my parents labeled as an intellectual's excuse for religion. And I'm currently an ELCA Lutheran. And so I'm comfortable saying I'm a Christian, but the Christian I am is far different than the Christian my parents were. But at the end of the day, my father died living that thing of preach the gospel at all times, and if necessary, use words. So, you know, I think a certain humility, you know, I'm saying this as a scientist, the whole approach, you know, if you study the history of science, you know, at one time we thought the world was flat. And so science is written with a pencil, not a pen. It's got enough humility to change over time. And so you don't want to be,
yeah, Peter,
you know, I think...
We're coming up on a newscast. Is there a specific point you want to make here?
Well, I guess, you know, you had asked, would I vote for an atheist? I'd want them to clarify it because I think you could have somebody who's a rabid atheist who is not humble enough, who is vulnerable to the humility that's required to be a good scientist.
All right, a reaction to that, Paul.
Well, you know, I would probably agree with that because, frankly, any non-believing politician who decided to make a kind of angry atheism their platform is probably not going to get very far. I think probably the bigger concern is whether a highly qualified politician who is a really good choice to be a legislator or a governor or a president, will be held back by the fact that they happen not to believe in a deity. So you can even take away the ideas of whether or not they are, you know, militantly atheistic or how strongly they believe in one way or the other. But will that identity hold them back? And I'm hoping that we're getting to the point where that is no longer the case. But I agree with the caller, whether you're talking about someone who is angrily atheist or whether they are chest-thumping fundamentalist Christian, I think those kinds of folks are going to have a hard time no matter what. Now, of course, depending on the particular district you're talking about. But I think any kind of militancy like that is going to turn people off regardless of the theological worldview.
We are talking about atheism in politics, atheist politicians, with Paul Fidalgo, Communications Director of the Center for Inquiry, an organization that seeks to foster secular society based on science, reason, and other non-religious values. He's also the author of Under the Stained Glass Ceiling, Atheists' Precarious Place in Modern American Politics. And we wonder if you would vote for an atheist politician, and why or why not? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. After U.S. Representative Barney Frank retired, he came out as an atheist during an appearance on The Bill Maher Show. When asked why he was open about his sexual orientation, he's been openly gay for 25 years, but did not discuss his lack of religious belief while he was in office, he said it really didn't matter when it came to public policy. We are talking about atheism and politics this hour, and wondering if you would vote for an openly atheist politician. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is 7:37 on this Friday, December 20th. Our guest is the author of Under the Stained Glass Ceiling, Atheists' Precarious Place in Modern American Politics. And we welcome your reactions, your questions, your views. Why haven't many, if any, politicians come out as atheist? Is it because they don't exist? Is it because they wouldn't be elected if they admitted to it? Does it matter? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Our guest is Paul Fidalgo, Communications Director of the Center for Inquiry and author of Under the Stained Glass Ceiling. Let's go right back to the phones. George in Milwaukee is our next caller. Hello, George.
Morning. Although it's speculation and there's no way of knowing, I think it's reasonable to think that there are a lot more people that are in higher public office who probably are atheists or agnostics. When you look at the population of the country, I believe it comes out at something like about between 10% and 15% or 20%. So that would seem to, for someone to think that if Congress is somewhat equal representation to the population at large in terms of their beliefs and whatnot, that there's probably quite a few people in Congress that actually are atheists or agnostics, but are in the closet about it.
Thanks, George. Do you think so, Paul?
Yeah, George, I think you're right. In fact, I think it's a little bit more than speculation. When Pete Stark was first revealed to be the only avowed atheist in Congress back in 2007, I think it was, the Secular Coalition for America, which is the group that did this survey, they found out that not only was Pete Stark the only atheist there, but that there were others as well who would not admit to it. And so those names we don't know. Those folks have not come out and said, I was one of them as well. So they had some folks who would say privately, but would not say publicly that they were non-religious. And another point that George made was that the representative nature of Congress, you know, you would think that it would more naturally better represent the demographics of the country. Unfortunately, that doesn't always turn out to be so. I think you'll find that, I don't know what the exact numbers are, but that the number of Christians in Congress are probably far overrepresented for the number of Christians in the country as a whole. And again, that comes back to the stigma of non-religion and the discomfort that some Americans have with folks of non-Christian religion coming in there. You also have a lot more Mormons, for example, in Congress than you have in the country as a whole. So it doesn't turn out to be as representative as you'd like it to be. Another point that George raised was the percentages in the country of those who are non-religious. There is a group known as, in the polling parlance, as the nuns, those who tick off non-affiliated in their religious preference. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that they are atheists. That could mean that they are religious in some sense. They might believe in a higher power. They might consider Jesus to be the Son of God, but they don't align with a particular church. And so those numbers can get very muddy. So there may actually be, though, and I think this is a good thing, far more folks who fit that description in Congress than would be, you know, utterly atheist or utterly secular in one way or the other. That can be encouraging in itself because it means that they are folks who are not necessarily tied to one particular dogma and therefore basing their decisions on one particular religion's version of how the universe works. So that could be encouraging in its own sense. And I would be curious to know how many folks in Congress, even if they are not atheistic, might check off the box for nuns or unaffiliated.
Yeah. Talk a little bit more about why that matters. Why should we even care if people cross off the nun box for religion or come out as atheist?
Well, there's two reasons for that, I think, that are the most important. And the first one I touched on before when we talked about Barney Frank, which is the symbolism. It matters when there are public figures who are respected, who are leaders, who stand up and claim an identity with an otherwise marginalized group. That doesn't necessarily mean that this leader, that this public figure is going to, rise to the highest heights of power necessarily, but it begins to crack away at the barriers of the folks in that marginalized group from achieving higher levels of notoriety and power and respect. You don't get a President Barack Obama until you get folks who are standing up and running for office, like Shirley Chisholm and Jesse Jackson running for president. They pave a way for folks like Barack Obama to become president eventually. We need these folks to stand up, declare their non-religion, declare their atheism, or what have you, or just declare that they are just not interested in religion one way or the other, and let them play themselves out. If they run for office and lose, that might be okay, because it still introduces Americans to the human face of an atheist American, of a non-religious American. So even just for the symbolic purposes of it, that's important. And on the policy side, the identity is less important than the positions one holds. And this is a really important point. As far as policy is concerned, it's not necessarily the end-all, be-all that we have lots of atheist folks in Congress. That is not really the point. The point is having representatives and leaders who are choosing to base their policy decisions on science, on fact, on data as it actually exists, rather than on religious revelation. For example, we have some folks in Congress who say that global warming can't hurt us because God has already said that he's not going to destroy the earth in the flood, QED, no global warming. That's the kind of thinking we need to avoid. We need to avoid the kind of magical thinking that leads to things like UFO conspiracies or conspiracy theories generally about, you know, evil machinations going on at several levels of government. We need folks who are thinking rationally about health policy and medicine, and rather than, you know, sending money toward alternative and homeopathic remedies that don't actually work. So it's more about the policy positions and where those policy positions are based that is really what's crucial. It happens to be, of course, that those who are secular and non-religious are very likely to hold many of those positions, but it's certainly uncomfortable with a religious politician, a religious leader, who does not base their policy decisions on their religion, on superstition, on spirituality, or things like that.
But a politician can follow a religion, be religious, and still be grounded in science and reason, yes?
Absolutely. And there are many, many who do that. And they can be strongly religious and feel their religion, you know, very deeply. And that it's what they do with that when they get to office is what's the most important thing. Now, again, there's enormous symbolic impact to political leaders declaring themselves non-religious. It opens doors for folks at all levels of life. So if folks who have atheist neighbors can feel more comfortable with being open about their non-religion. People can feel more open about expressing themselves to their family if they have a religious family and they themselves are non-religious. When public figures are comfortable with their own non-religion and aren't afraid of sharing it with the wider world and take the chance of whatever slings and arrows might come at them because of it, it helps everyone. It opens doors for everyone who is non-religious down the line. So in the case of Barney Frank, yeah, it would have been really great if he had come out earlier as an atheist while he held office. He was certainly safe. I mean, I don't think there was any chance that Barney Frank was going to get booted from office because he was an atheist. I think folks pretty much, you know, take Barney Frank as he comes. And it would have set off a few extra light bulbs. It would have chipped a little bit more away at those social barriers that are currently still exist around atheists. So, you know, those barriers are starting to crumble. I mean, it's getting easier, but they still exist.
We will continue taking your calls for Paul Fidalgo, Communications Director of the Center for Inquiry and author of Under the Stained Glass Ceiling, Atheists' Precarious Place in Modern American Politics. We welcome your questions. We welcome your views. Would a politician being an atheist influence how you vote? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. 11 minutes before 8 o'clock on this Friday, December 20th, we are talking about atheism and politics with our guest, who is author of Under the Stained Glass Ceiling, Atheists' Precarious Place in Modern American Politics. And our next caller is Jay in Eau Claire. Hello, Jay.
Hi.
I understand you would not vote for an atheist, Jay.
I would not vote for an atheist. I would not vote for someone whose wishful thinking would have us believe the universe created itself out of nothing. And we keep hearing separation of church and state, as though these words appear in the Establishment Clause. They do not. They originate in the old Constitution of the Soviet Union. And why is no one mentioning Stalin, Hitler, Mao Zedong, the world's greatest mass murderers?
Are they all atheists, Paul?
There's a whole lot to unpack in the caller's statements there. Hitler, no, not an atheist. Stalin, probably an atheist. But I think what the caller's probably getting at with stuff like that is, you know, a kind of fear that a secular government is going to lead to some kind of fascistic state, where religion is no longer allowed, and you know, we hear this kind of thing a lot. It's unfortunate that some folks kind of cling to that idea. Now, there's Stalin probably a non-believer, but if you look at something like the Soviet Union, you had something that wasn't too far removed from a religious state in the sense that the state itself was propped up as a kind of divine force, and that people were forced to, pay their loyalties to the state and the party in a way that is not too different from, you know, some of the more severe, hard right kind of religions that we see sometimes. So I understand where the caller is coming from, certainly, But it wasn't atheism that led to the problems of the Soviet Union. It was a whole other thing entirely. I don't believe that we have all the time you would need to unpack all of that, though, in your show right now.
Yeah, let me. I don't want to get into a huge debate over the separation of church and state not appearing in our Constitution, but
sure.
Jay says he wouldn't vote for an atheist because of the wishful thinking that the universe created itself. A response to that?
Yeah. Again, I understand where he's coming from. It's not the atheists. Atheists are not coming from a place of wishful thinking. I think that's pretty clear. If nothing else, most atheists have decided to put aside wishful thinking, to put aside magical thinking, and instead take the world as it is, accept what science so far has been able to tell us about the universe. There are myriad questions that remain unanswered, and that's one of the exciting things about being interested in science and reason, is that you can keep asking questions and continuing to discover more about the world and about the universe as it actually is, rather than relying upon old texts or religious revelation or unfounded traditions that have been passed on over the centuries that, you know, have value in their cultural import. They have value as allegory, perhaps, but don't necessarily tell us much about the actual nature of the universe itself. I think, again, what I mentioned earlier was that folks tend to think that one can't have a moral core if they are not religious. But atheist Americans, secular Americans, non-religious Americans have the same intuitions and the same loves and feelings and inclinations to do good that anyone else does, but they don't base it on a supernatural deity. They base it on their own human experience and the connections they feel to the real world and the real people around them. And I think if our caller maybe perhaps knew more atheists, I would hope that he would get to know a couple and see that they are not scary, they are not wishfully thinking, that they are trying to do the best with what the world offers, just like anybody else.
Thank you very much, Jay, for the call. Greg in Milwaukee is next. Hello, Greg.
Hello. Good morning. I would vote for an atheist long before I'd vote for a religious person for numerous reasons. I look at look at Christianity. Look at Ireland, the Protestants and the Catholics. What religion is it's a way of aligning yourself in a group of people who believe, like the Shiites and the Sunnis, killing each other because of a religious argument from centuries ago. It's illogical. Our President Bush, it's told the ambassador from Egypt that he invaded Iraq because God told him to do it. Now, you see, we can't have leaders who are basing any conclusions on ideologies or on mythologies. I wish I could believe. I wish I could sit there and I could believe that somebody created this and somebody turned a chicken to a pillar of salt for looking back and grounded the whole world. And then when we murdered his kid, he forgave us for everything. It's illogical. And Mary did have sex.
All right. Well, I don't know. We can't keep on going and going on that one. But should we not vote for someone because they believe in a religion?
No. I understand what the caller is saying. And certainly, religion is used as an excuse for the furthering of human conflict at all levels. It certainly can be used in a divisive way. And absolutely, as I've mentioned before, by basing policy decisions on myth, on spiritual revelation, makes for bad policy. So that's certainly true. But also, as I said before, there are many, many, many people who are religious at all levels who are able to separate that when it comes to policymaking, who do rely on science, on fact, on data, as it actually is, when they're making their policy. And their spiritual beliefs are personal to themselves. It's between them and their family and whatever it is that they believe in. And there's no problem there from a secular government perspective. And so, as I mentioned, you know, electing atheists to Congress is great on a symbolic level. It probably means that they will come along with those qualities that I mentioned, probably. But that's not to say that it's a problem that people who hold religious beliefs are elected to office, as long as they are governing in such a way that they are basing their decisions on fact and reality as it actually is.
I wanted to ask you about Republican presidential candidate Mitt Romney during the 2012 presidential campaign saying that freedom requires religion. I know you touched on this in your book. We only have a little bit of time left in the hour. What's your reaction to that?
Well, you know, it's a fascinating episode to me. It was really enlightening. This is actually from his first presidential run. In 2007 or so, he famously gave his religion speech, his what people called his Mormon speech, which was supposed to kind of be analogous to JFK's Catholicism speech, where he talked about his religion openly and how it would affect his presidency. And one of his lines was about how freedom requires God, and anyone who kneels down in prayer is a friend of mine. And certainly that got my attention when it implied that atheists were not included in there. That atheists could not be free, it was implied. That he could not befriend someone who is a non-believer was implied by his statements. So that was troubling, but what was encouraging to me, and it was a sign that things were changing, was that he was called out on this by two major network news personalities. He, in person, by Tim Russert. He sat across the table from Tim Russert on Meet the Press, and Tim Russert asked him about this very question. Does that mean atheists are not included in your friendship, that atheists cannot really enjoy freedom? And Mitt Romney had to back away from that assertion. He had to say, no, of course, they are included just as much as anyone else. And George Stephanopoulos also, I remember, checked in with the campaign and wanted them to clarify what they were talking about. Were atheists included in that or not? And the fact that the mainstream media, at the height of political journalism, noticed that our little marginalized group that is supposed to be so politically poisonous was not mentioned by this prospective presidential candidate, that told me that things were beginning to change in our direction.
We'll leave it there for now because we're out of time. Thank you very much for being with us.
Absolutely my pleasure. Thank you so much.
Paul Fidalgo is with the Center for Inquiry, and he is also the author of Under the Stained Glass Ceiling, Atheist Precarious Place in Modern American Politics. Thanks to Christy Taylor and to Robin Cherry for producing and directing this program. Stay tuned. The Week in Review is next. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.